we decided we would put together a message that would come from three of our global worker couples. The message focuses on the theme, the world of missions. And each couple will hit a different point. The first couple are our global workers, Peter and Pat DeWitt. They minister in Paris, France. Then the next couple is Scott and Melissa Williams, who minister in Spain. And lastly is Matthew and Amber Price, and that couple ministers in Bangkok, Thailand. And I hope you will enjoy what they have to share as they challenge us and they give a little bit of perspective from their setting. Would you watch this sermon this morning?
Verily, I say to you, whoever believes in me will do the works that I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these things. What? Jesus said that we would do greater things than him? I'm not sure that we even believe that, because how many times have you ever gone up to somebody and said, hey, I think that what you're doing is even greater than what Jesus did? I don't think so. Peter and I were really wondering what Jesus could have meant when he said this. I personally believe that Jesus was actually trusting us with justice in our own hands. He knew that there would come a day when there would be a different standard for the way that we treat people in the margins, for the way we treat women in our society. And he knew that it would be his people who would be involved in bringing these changes, that slavery would be abolished, that children would be protected, and that refugees would find welcome with dignity. Now, in our home, Peter collects shoes of many sizes. They're not for him. They're for other people. As I speak right now, there's a collection of shoes on my kitchen counter, along with sugar, coffee filters, and socks, and thermoses. On any Tuesday, Friday, or Saturday, there will be puddles of coffee all over here, spilling on the floor everywhere. Now, for most people, these things are not the makings of a feast, but they are a few of the essential ingredients for dignity. There's a very heartwarming story of a father who thought of everything that he wanted to do in order to restore his own son back to his original dignity. And one of those items was shoes for his feet. As our Serve the City volunteers gather at the usual meeting point, they've disrupted their sleep and they've given their Saturdays in order to serve. And they too come with items to restore people back to their original dignity. One day I was with a team and we approached a young man who was asleep. Marie quietly laid a sandwich beside his head, but he awoke. His face was young, but his eyes were old. He began his morning routine and we turned away to give him some privacy. But he called us back immediately, and I think he was worried that we would go away without giving him his sandwich and his coffee. So we waited beside him as he methodically arranged his home on the bench. It was as if we weren't even there, like the stations of the cross. Take water bottle from backpack, wash hands, smooth hair and beard, breathe. Save empty water bottle in backpack. Find belt in backpack. Loop belt through pants. Button up shirt. Tuck shirt in. Do up belt buckle. Fold sleeping bag. Put sleeping bag back in backpack. Sit down on bench. Breathe. And finally face the guests. This is how he holds on to his bench-sized dignity. It's not always easy to respect dignity in these mornings while serving in Paris's dirty corners. One day I had to cross the street and hide behind the ancient pillars that surround Place des Vosges so as not to show that I was crying. I'm not ashamed of my tears, but I did not want the weight of my tears to add to the heaviness in the hearts of these refugees. I didn't want to make anyone feel that they needed to comfort me. Me, who has a passport, me who is on the outside of this police barricade, me who wakes up in a bed, in a home, with a roof, me who sleeps in a tent only when I want to, me who knows exactly where and when my next meals will be. I sucked back those tears and I hugged those people. Yes, I hugged them. I wrapped my arms around them even during a pandemic and I hugged them two young teens who had just crossed an ocean, who had just crossed my path, who had just arrived in Paris from their war-torn countries. These are sons of mothers who must be worried. And I hugged them. There was a woman on the inside of the barricade who gave them instructions. If you're coming in, you need to come through the gate, she said. And before we parted ways, in the name of their mothers, I looked them in the eyes and I hugged them goodbye. And I couldn't help but think, there's got to be something greater that I can do than this.
Recently, I was asked at my 60th birthday party, how did you learn to live with such heart and compassion? And the room was full of all our guests from places like India, Hong Kong, Rwanda, France, Canada, America. And the room grew really quiet as people waited for wisdom to flow from my lips. And I simply said, Jesus, Jesus. His life from start to finish was all about radical, overcoming love. That's how I learned. And I think about the Apostle Paul. Nobody else after Jesus taught or shaped Christianity as much as this man. And of course, he got all his cues as well from Jesus, this deep connection that he had with him. And the phrase that Paul is best known for is from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 13. And Paul says, out of faith, hope, and love, the greatest, hands down, is love. One of my favorite verses from Paul is this neglected, not so well-known verse from Galatians chapter 5, verse 6. And Paul says, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. Now, before Paul had any kind of faith in Jesus, he was this religious correctness freak. Insert Jewish Taliban, if you would, a human abuser. And this is what the picture of Paul was before he was a believer in Jesus. So zealous was he for the laws of Moses that he set himself up as a caretaker of that religious correctedness, and woe to you if you deviated from them. He even pursued those who followed Jesus, wanting to put them in jail or even worse. That was the before picture. But after a discovery and an encounter with Jesus, he migrated away from all this religious structure, these systems, these laws, and he writes that the thing that matters most, Galatians 5 and 6, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. That should be our mantra. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. The only thing that counts. Love is what defines us and identifies us as believers. It's not some membership card to a church. It's not being in a crowd of hundreds and thousands worshiping God with our hands in the air that marks us out as people of faith. Our true identity is revealed when those around us see a faith expressing itself through love. Love for God, love for self, love for neighbor, love for the stranger, love for even our enemy. In the words of Jesus, he said, they will know you are my disciples when, or in my words, they will know your true identity as followers of Jesus when they see love in action. You know, this past week, we're distributing coffee and tea and sandwiches on the streets of Paris, and one gentleman stopped and said, may I ask you a question? Where do you all come from? He noticed that none of us were French. And then he said, so why would you move all the way here to France to serve us who have nothing? And I was the only French speaker, so I said, à cause de l'amour, monsieur, because of love. You know, I grew up in the church, and while we were taught to ask this question, what would Jesus do? It wasn't what would Jesus think, because love does. Love doesn't think. Can you imagine? I said to my wife, hey, honey, Today I thought about buying you a bouquet of roses. Nice thought, huh? I think she might slap me in the face. But, you know, love does. I just bought a book, and I only bought it for one reason. I love the title. It could be a crappy book, but the title is Weology. Everybody wins when we comes before me. I thought that book, Weology, is pretty good theology, because human flourishing on this planet is really when we put we before me, me, me. And so I wanted to remind you today that the best expression of faith is a lifestyle of extreme human engagement. For Patricia and I, it has become serving the vulnerable, the homeless, the asylum seeker, the refugee. We give our time, we give our energy, and we put the resources that we have in our hands to use, to bless, to love. Because we have understood this, that the faith in our head has to seep down into our hearts, but it expresses itself through our feet, the way we walk. If we could all do that a little bit more, I think that Jesus would call that, I think he would call that great.
Hey CPC, we're so glad to be with you this morning, today, whatever time it is that you're seeing us. But we're just excited to be able to be with you. Just by way of update, we've recently moved into the city of Barcelona, which was a fantastic move for the family. The kids are now close to school, even for work, getting down to the ministry and the coffee shop. It's just such an easy, quick, you know, shoot down on the bus or the metro or whatever it is we want to do. Because previously, when we were living out of the city, it could take anywhere between 1 and 2 hours in traffic jams to get into the city. But anyways, it's been a fantastic move, and we're doing so well. We hope you're doing well as well. I mean, it's everything's starting to open up, and life is slowly getting back into a rhythm that maybe we're a little bit more familiar with, but it's great. So anyways, we wanted to give you an update, not an update, but more of a share some thoughts that we've had about just kind of, you know, what we've been up to and some ministry ideas and just some different things that we've kind of like working through ourselves. And we just wanted to share those ideas with you. So, you know, when we were in El Salvador, we were working in a different type of ministry that had a lot to do with events and like large format, working with, you know, tons of people. I mean, some events, thousands of people, right? And we knew that when we were going to come to Spain, things were going to be a little bit different. We knew that, you know, the European culture is just different. And we knew that there was going to be a distance between us and everybody here. We knew that everything would be done more relationally rather than in a large format. We knew that things would be a lot slower, very slow. In fact, we were anticipating. And so we kind of had that idea in our heads before we even got here. Then we get here and we start settling in, you know, we start get involved with the ministry that we're involved with. We've committed to taking on the coffee shop as part of our ministry. And then COVID hits and we get shut down. And, you know, we're sitting on the couch in our little apartment outside of town and we're kind of trapped in this isolation phase. And we're thinking, well, we knew ministry was going to be slow, but we never imagined it was going to be like this. And so we have to start thinking, okay, so how do we do what we want to do in the environment in which, in the context in which we're in right now? How do we spread the love of Christ? How do we show hope and peace and love to everyone around us, being trapped in our apartment and our little building in a little town way outside of Barcelona? And so we just started to do the best things that we could, right? Like, what were some of the things that we did?
I think we just decided in that moment that, you know what, God called us here for a reason. We knew that things would be slower. We knew that things would be different, that doing outward evangelism wasn't something that was going to be possible for us. And just like Scott said, when COVID happened, we were like, oh my goodness, what now? But COVID was the perfect opportunity for us to learn how to do ministry in a relational context here in Spain. And one of the things that we really started to do when we were living in our little apartment in Alea was create community around us with our neighbors. We weren't allowed outside of our building. We weren't allowed to have contact with them. You know, it was talking over your balcony or going to the door and standing 6 feet away from them. But we really started to be very intentional about how we were gonna reach our neighbors and get to know them.
Yeah, we would knock on their doors. Well, Melissa did it more than me because she's so amazing at this stuff. But you bought them flowers and you deliver them, and we had, you know, time talking with them. We delivered food in some cases to some of them. You know, we're just doing different things. And then, you know, we moved into town and we started trying to figure out, okay, so now we're over a coffee shop that's open only a handful of hours a day, and we're only allowed to have a handful of people through the door at any given time. How do we do that? Like, how do we make this, first of all, a thriving business, but then also how do we make this an environment where people feel welcomed and people feel hope and people feel love and people feel just something different than everything else that the world's throwing at them? And so it really started to make us think about how we could start doing different things. But then, you know, I also started to think in my head, and maybe this is something a little bit too transparent, too personal maybe, but started to think, okay, how is that ministry? I mean, I know it is. I know it is. I know that relationally, you know, we need to be connecting with people. We need to be, you know, exemplifying Christ everywhere we go. We need to be listening to people and hearing them and providing hope and whatever it is that God's telling us to do in that moment. Like, I get that. I know that's ministry. But as missionaries being sent out, how can I qualify, or how can I say that, yeah, this is what we're here to do and this is what we're doing? But then I started thinking about, you know, what the Bible has to say about it, right? And I started thinking about Jesus's ministry, and yeah, sure. I mean, he spoke to the masses. Mm-hmm. He spoke in the synagogues and he spoke to vast amounts of people. But then so often he would go off by himself and meet with one or two people. He would meet with the woman by the well, or the tax collector and the sinners, and be sitting, I could just imagine, at a dirty picnic table with no one else around except, you know, a few people milling about, and somehow get their attention and start chatting and just being him in that environment. And so that's where I really started to think, you know what? Yeah, this is, we knew it was going to be slow, and we knew that our ministry was going to reflect something very different than what we were normally doing. And it seems that, like, this has really taken off for us, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've had some really incredible opportunities.
Yeah, we really have. Before we moved here, the Lord really put on my heart, just like this phrase, making room for one more. And I didn't really know what that meant, because I felt like that's how we lived our lives. We live our lives with an open door, and if you need to come sit at our table, there's room. But little did I know we would be moving into a context where, especially with COVID, where sometimes there is only room for one more.
Literally.
And so we need to make sure that we're open and willing to meet with that one more that's coming to our table or into our context. And one of the things in Frenesi, at our cafe, and also the theme of our church, is that we're in our city for our city. And our church building and our church office and our cafe is right in the middle of one of the LGBTQ communities here in Barcelona. And we have a sign in our cafe that says, "We filter coffee and not people." And I remember when we first started there, I thought, well, that's kind of a funny little saying, but it's come to be so true, because we get so many different people that walk through the door. And one of those people is our friend Robert. And Robert comes in to the cafe every once in a while. And the first few times that we came, we thought, wow, this guy's a real character. He's homosexual. He has a partner. He's got this crazy blue hair. He's super dynamic. He's really funny. He likes to laugh a lot. I think he's probably high most of the time that he comes in to the cafe. But we've really just started to be able to form a relationship with Robert. So much so that during COVID, he got bronchitis that actually turned into COVID and got put on one of the COVID wards here in one of the hospitals. He was lucky enough to get a bed. But he wanted his partner to come down and tell us where he was, because we weren't going to see him for a while.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to our hearts, because we thought, you know what? We serve this guy coffee. We have a little conversation with him once in a while. You know, we laugh at his jokes and stuff. But when he was really, really sick and isolated and no one could go in and visit him, the one thing he wanted was for them to come and let us know where he was. And so we committed as a staff that we were going to pray for him and do what we could. Once he was able to have visitors, another girl that we're connected with went to visit him and make sure he had what he wanted. But the reality is we all have Roberts in our life. Mm-hmm. We all have guys and gals like Robert who need someone to just be there and listen to them and laugh at their jokes and spend time with them and serve them some food and some coffee. Because when push comes to shove, we're the ones that they want on their side. And so Robert is just one of these great examples of a person that we could have easily filtered and said, yeah, this guy's a weirdo, you know, but we decided to only filter his coffee and to accept him for who he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Even we've got this lady named Mercedes, and Mercedes, totally different end of the spectrum. Her and her husband come in every now and then. Oh, no,
every day, not every now and then.
I should say every now and then during the day.
Yeah.
But at least once a day she comes in, and there's about a week and a half where she didn't show up. And this is just the other day, and she comes in, finally comes in on the Sunday when we're there working. And as soon as she walks through the door, we're like, what? Where have you been? What's been going on? She's like, she was taken back, and she's like, oh, we were on holidays. I was like, well, that's amazing. Tell us about it. So she started, you know, telling us about her holidays and her trip. And then, you know, we're joking around with her, and we're telling her, hey, listen, next time you do something, this, you got to tell us. You got to let us know. And so we're building these bridges. We're building these relationships with people that it's really starting to kick in the community for sure. And then, you know, sometimes, again, going back to the Bible, right, starting to think about, who else did this type of relational stuff? I mean, we know Paul did. I mean, he became the Roman to the Romans. He became everyone to everybody that he needed to be able to show them the love of Christ, right? Like that was one thing that he did. But then also, you know, you look at Andrew, and he won Peter for Christ, and he brought Peter in relationship with Christ. And you look at Nathaniel, same thing happened with him, right? Like 75% of the people who come to Christ do it through relationship. And so we just need to step into that more and more. And that's what we've been really, really, really trying to do, right? And so every day we're trying to figure this stuff out more and more. We don't have it figured out, but we're trying to, right? Every single day. And so that's probably what we probably want to kind of leave that message on your hands as well. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we're trying to adapt into our lives even more and more, being more intentional, is that community fosters love. And Scott just mentioned Paul, and in 1 Corinthians 13, Paul talks about love a lot. And one of the things he says is, now what remains is faith, hope, and love is the greatest of these. And we know that God's example to us is love. And so as his servants and his followers and people who are trying to live our lives intentionally for him is to show love. So I guess our challenge would be to grow some community around you and foster love and see what can happen.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be anything incredible or special. It just has to be now. It has to be in the moment. And people just have to know it's authentic and real and to be able to grab onto that and just run with it. It's amazing. Man, we just want to thank you so much for this opportunity to be able to share with you and talk and just for a few minutes be with you guys in your context and in your gathering. So we love you guys, and we hope to see you actually in person one day, maybe, right? We can do that. Maybe one day whenever we're allowed to move around again. But anyways, from Barcelona, Spain to you guys, take care. Hopefully we'll see you soon.
Transformative Christianity, in fact, we can just say is Christianity. Our entire belief system is based on the fact that God changes us, not to a better version of ourselves, but something truly new, a new creation. And so as Christians, our relationship with God every day is changing us. And we believe that change isn't limited to just us as individuals or as a couple or as a family or as a community, but even to nations. Christianity is a transformative journey. The gospel message is inherently change-based. It has changed things throughout history. As global workers, we try to find ways that are cross-culturally appropriate, ways that are understood by our host culture, that there could be an organic understanding of who Jesus is and about God's love for people here. But we need to be mindful that we're never trying to jazz up or, you know, make it more glamorous. The gospel message brings change in and of itself. It's radical, all on its own. This gospel message, the hope that we have because Jesus has sacrificed for us to make intimate relationship with God possible, this hope that we have, it has been changing us for a long time now. It has been changing humanity for a long time now. So when Pastor Jeff asked us to speak about how do we bring the gospel into a hopeless situation, really, we don't need to ask about bringing. It's more a question of being. How do we be the gospel in hopeless and desperate situations? Being present is an incredibly valuable thing. And as Christians, we often undervalue the power of being present. And if you doubt that, then I'd invite you to come to a hotel room with us and our four kids. Because when we get into that hotel room, it is pristine, it is gorgeous and well taken care of. And probably in like 20 minutes, that's generous, less than 10, it looks like our suitcase has vomited across that room and our stuff is in drawers that I didn't even think we'd opened yet. Our presence, just our presence in that room, changes that space. Now, of course, in this situation, it's not for the better. It's not a good thing. And so as Christians, not only do we need to be present, but we need to make sure that our presence is creating positive change in those spaces. Of course, in opposition to hope is hopelessness, things like despair. And when we talk about hopelessness and despair, we often use really combative, aggressive language. We battle hopelessness, we combat hunger, we fight fear. And this kind of language shapes our thinking, and it takes all the focus and it puts us on the big, bad situation. It makes it seem even more powerful. And it takes the focus away from God, the bringer of peace, the creator of change, the healer in those situations. We don't often talk about things that aren't so aggressive sounding. We don't talk about sitting with sadness or crying with the grieving or standing on the ledge with the desperate. We don't use that kind of language. It doesn't enter our thoughts in the same way. You see, hope is the great includer. Most of us as people, we know what it's like to have some measure of hope. The idea that maybe tomorrow things will be better. And that has allowed people to persist through some pretty genuinely awful situations. And as Christians, we should be the most hope-filled as we live our lives connected to the promises and assurances of God. Now, our life experiences may differ from other people, and that's a wonderful thing that we can walk different journeys. They can be different, but we all understand the power of hope. And in that sense, hope is a great includer. We all know the power of hope. We all know the pain of its absence. Hope unites us. And so how much more so should it do that for us as Christians who know the greatest hope of all? There has to be genuine change for something to be transformational. Can't be temporary, doesn't go back. There's genuine change for something to be transformational. Now, as Christians, we believe in spiritual transformation, but this transformation must, and I mean 100% must, lead to both social and societal transformation as well. If our transformation on a spiritual level doesn't lead to something more in families, in relationships, in communities, then it is not transformational in this way. While hope may be intangible, we can't put our hands on it, the fuel that powers hope is completely tangible. Our words and our actions are hope fuel. During the course of this pandemic, we've been able to do food and hygiene parcels for women in the red light district and for people in very remote and rural areas. And there have been countless times that people have told us that God has appeared to them in the form of a kilo of rice, cooking oil, eggs, something so practical. And yet it's the thing that can introduce transformation into their lives. We were recently talking with somebody who told us that they were standing in a mega mall here in Bangkok. They're on the top floor looking down over this atrium, and they are facing a really genuinely awful situation. And they stood there and they thought, maybe it would be better. Maybe it would be better for me and for everyone else if I just jumped. And they stood there at that edge for 5 hours before deciding it wasn't their day to jump. And as they told us this, it reminded us that often when people talk about being so desperate that they want life to be over, what's really being expressed is that season of life, or life as they know it right now, for it to be over, but they just can't yet see their way through it. It's a desperation, it's a desire for change, for something more. In those situations, people may never understand the things that are intangible, this intangible nature of hope. When people are struggling to put food on the table for their kids, when people are literally standing on a ledge and thinking maybe today is the day, they wouldn't understand this intangible nature of hope, but they will understand your words, they will understand your actions, and those will be the vehicle for hope to be present in people's lives.
With the understanding that being the gospel is what brings transformation, we have to think about how does this apply to our lives? And I wonder if perhaps our cultural bent towards doing and strategizing and executing. It's somewhere in there that we have missed the simplicity of being present in the lives of others. Not that there's anything inherently wrong with those other things, but I think maybe we've overcomplicated it, that hope comes through our presence. So yes, there may be things that we can do to meet the needs of somebody else. But before we can do that, we need to acknowledge their situation, acknowledge their feelings, and the presence with them and a knowing is required. When we sit with somebody in a hopeless situation, it makes it a little bit more bearable for them because they aren't in it alone anymore. We have been so quick to meet people's hopelessness with platitudes, I think for too long. When we are faced with something that makes us uncomfortable, the go-to response, and like for me, would be that idea of, oh, like God's not gonna give you anything that you can't bear. Mm. Or everything happens for a reason. I'm sure we've all been told that. And when you are facing something hard and difficult and where you can't see your way through it, hearing those words doesn't necessarily bring hope. Often it leaves people feeling more alone, more isolated and less understood. And I guess I would challenge it with, you know, when somebody is facing something really difficult, when, you know, a job has been lost and it's hard to put food on the table, show up with the groceries. You know, when somebody has had a loved one pass away, and yeah, it's uncomfortable and we don't know what to say when somebody has passed away for so many of us, because we haven't been taught that growing up, you know, but to show up and to be there and to cry with them, to make the dinner and take it over. These are ways that we can show up and be present and bring hope and make sure that people are not feeling alone. Light and darkness don't coexist together. And our presence in these difficult situations brings hope, and it brings people towards something that is more Christ-like and where change is felt and change is seen. You know, Jesus was on earth for 33 years. And when you look at what's written about his life, you know, like there's obviously lots that we don't know about. And what is recorded is almost all the time is him spent doing real life with people, eating meals and being present and hearing about their sickness and their loved one that has died, these difficult things. And you know, when we are introduced to who Jesus is, the name that we are given is Emmanuel. It means God with us. That is our model. Jesus showing up is what brought the change and what brought the hope. And so I challenge myself and I challenge you today, show up and be present in the lives of others and be you and allow God to be God. And then we get to sit and watch and wonder and see the transformation that occurs when hope is present in people's lives again.
We strategically asked the global workers to speak to each topic. Peter and Pat, you see them serving the city in a very practical way. We want what they're doing in Paris to transcend what we do here in the city. And I think what our food bank is doing, the Compassion Center, is one of those ways that we're doing it. But friends, each of us are called to live the gospel practically. And then we went to the Williams, and the focus was relationship. And the Williams have a coffee shop where they're doing their ministry. Very different approach for global workers. Rather than just preaching the gospel, moving from community to community, they're doing it one at a time through coffee shop relationships. And I think that message of relational mission can transcend into each of our lives as we build relationships with people around us. And then we asked the Prices to talk about transformation, transformational ministry. Matthew looks after Child Care Plus, and they're working with refugees that are in prison, and they're going into hopeless situations. And Amber is working with various ministries that also are dealing with some of this element. And that message, the first two points, pointing to the fact of the gospel that transforms our life. And we step into hopeless situations and we bring hope. That message that they do in Bangkok, Thailand, can be lived out in our lives this week as we look around for people who are in hopeless situations. And the gospel that's changed us can change their lives too. And so we celebrate what God's doing, but we also use it as the springboard to live out our lives this week. Let's close this service right now with a word of prayer as we focus on what we've just heard. Jesus, I thank you so much for our global workers who are doing fantastic things. We celebrate them, and it's part of our vision, God. We want to see the world impact, and we're pouring money into our global workers. We thank you for Peter and Pat and how they're serving the city in Paris. We thank you for Scott and Melissa as they're building relationships in the coffee shop that they have established there in Barcelona. We thank you for Matthew and Amber for the way they're bringing transformation to young children and to refugees in prison, how they're going into hopeless situations and being the gospel. Jesus, we pray blessings on them, but we also ask that their model, what they've shared today, would be in our lives, and we would live out the mission in our context this week, doing things for people, being the feet and the hands of Jesus, building relationships, and wherever we go, that the changes that the gospel has brought to us would be bring hope to the hopeless in our lives. Jesus, use us today. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Have a great day.